The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. We are quickly approaching the end of 2024, and if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities, so LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Talk a little bit more about the produce and just growing produce on the site as well, because that's something that you really don't see in the city. I mean, you know, you might see things here and there, small little urban farms and stuff like that. But talk about that and why that was a part of the project and just what you see as the benefits of that in the long term.
Yeah, of the vertical farming. So when we started looking at how to conceptualize around doing a development from the inside out, there's some very key pieces. Culture is one of them. And without having to relitigate our past, you know, we're missing some key pieces from an antiquitous standpoint of this is how we've done it for 10,000 years, right? Where other people get to actually benefit from those things, we almost have to make those things up in real time and then replace some of that cultural DNA with the current, you know, modern world that we live in. And so when you look at sustainability, food, water, shelter, you know, those are the three main pieces. But then having to create something that is not just, you know, static, you know, it has to actually render, you know, some other sustainability models from social to economic. That piece for vertical farming was really key because agriculture is a part of culture. So when you're looking at food, that's a huge part of culture. Yeah. And so when we started looking at it, we said, you know, here are the four corners of culture, which is performing arts, visual arts / retail, technology as a replacement of language, and then agriculture as how we source our food and our nutrition. And we as a community suffer from two of the most silent killers of hypertension and diabetes. That is really stemmed from our diet and the lack of good produce, the lack of nutritional foods tend to attribute to those two major health issues that we have in our community. So without having to be diagnostic about health, let's look at it prognostically and say, let's do vertical farming. Let's farm some of this produce ourselves.
That makes a lot of sense. Is the Woodlawn area a food desert?
Yes. Well, mm-hmm. it had been for a really long time. Mm-hmm. There was recently a grocery store, a large chain grocery store that was put in. It's maybe about a mile from the Woodlawn Central site. But mm-hmm. I think that, you know, without those corner delis, you know, in New York, I've lived in New York for a minute, mm-hmm. you know, you had your bodegas, you know, you can always go and get food. You can walk outside your door and there's always food. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't been that way in Chicago for a long time, specifically Woodlawn.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, being in a food desert, it's tied to a bunch of negative outcomes, as yep. we know. Oh, yeah. So I think the fact that that is an intentional part of the project is, it means everything, you know, for those who live there, but also the community at large. And now, you know, you can have two opportunities to get fresh produce within a mile of each other. I mean, that just makes the way for more.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, the 2060 plan vision for Smart Woodlawn now looks at the entire community. Mm. And so Woodlawn Central is a micro version of that. So you actually have an entire agriculture district mm. and a technology district and a performing arts district. We can have more than one theater, right? We're allowed to have more than one thing. Right? You say, oh, we already have that. No, we can have more, yeah. right? And that adds, you know, to the flavor of the diversity of who we are. And so, yeah.
Definitely. Can you share a bit more just about the Woodlawn community, just in general, the history, some of the challenges and some of those things? Because sure. I want to make sure we put the community on the spotlight, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Chicago is an amazing city. And, you know, I think it's a great opportunity to put light on an area where maybe some people haven't heard of.
Yeah. Well, Woodlawn at one point had about 90,000 residents. It was a bustling community. It had a lot of commerce. It had a lot of culture. It had a manufacturing district. There's a South Chicago manufacturing district. It's like at least 3 or 4 miles long. It goes from the mid city all the way to the east of the city. It was one of those cities that, you know, it was after the Great Migration, you know, people went, a lot of blacks moved from the South to Chicago. And when the war happened, you know, they all, you know, most of us stayed because we couldn't fight in the war during that time. And so we took a lot of those manufacturing jobs. And when the war was over and they came back, there was too many of us. And that's where that white flight came from. Mm. So a lot of the big brownstones and graystones and mansions and mini mansions that we have, you know, between Woodlawn and Bronzeville were all at one time a very white community. And now it's 70% black. But there's a lot of Hansberry, Lorraine Hansberry came out of Woodlawn and the South Side, and Quincy Jones. And I mean, the list goes on and on how many people have come out of Chicago, because it is the birthplace of gospel, the birthplace of house music, the birthplace of jazz and blues, and the Checkerboard Lounge, you know, that was there very close to Woodlawn. Just, you know, when you separate the communities, they're not culturally separated. So when I mention certain things that are outside of Woodlawn at this moment, we're really about a South Side movement, and there wasn't a huge divide, you know, that we have now. But yeah, the community itself right now is poised to be that model community. They are ready and are very, very organized. Back in the 60s, Bishop Brazier, who is my grandfather, hosted Martin Luther King during the Civil Rights Movement. And one of my grandfather's biggest pieces was Black self-determination. And so he really put a lot of work. He wasn't just a pastor, but he was a community leader. He himself did about 17 developments within Woodlawn. And so, you know, there's that big piece that I could probably talk about a whole hour just on that. but there's a lot of history, and it's the reason why the Obamas wanted to be in Woodlawn was because of the church and because the community was organized. And Woodlawn is certainly in my, and I may be a little biased, but in my view is the community that's going to model what I believe Black America, Afro America will look like in the future.
I love that. So what stage would you say the project is in?
We are just at the tail end of the strategic planning process, and we are going into, or we are working with the city right now, and we're going into what's called an intake. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get all your permits and your zoning, and we're getting the plan development amended to add the project to it. There's a few months that'll go into paperwork and this and that, and then ultimately a city council vote. To amend the PD, and so that's where we're at.
Definitely. What's the PD for those of
you? It's
a know?
It's called a plan development.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. It's a short. We say PD and it's a plan develop plan development 456.
Gotcha.
Really exciting.
What do you think might be the approximate cost of this project?
Well, we're looking at about $900 million.
Okay.
And I would probably estimate it'll go up to $1 billion, just how development works. It could even go up to $1.1 billion. And you know, we'll see how that works. I mean, we have our development team ready to go. We have our architects, you know, ready to go, all local architects. We do have some national architects who understand more of the district development side. Most of the architects within our community don't get to work on projects this big. Mm-hmm. So it was really important for me to make sure that they were integrated. And they're also mostly women of color.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love that. So in terms of like financing, what does that look like on a project? That's a massive budget.
Well, yeah, the financing is really interesting because the investment matrix has not seen something like this before, right? Typically you have your usual suspect developer who will come in and they'll leverage their assets and they'll bring in other partners to leverage their assets. And, you know, they'll bond the project and then they'll build it the best way they can. With this particular project, because it's done from the inside out, banks do not do pre-development. Mm-hmm. What they do is they give money to CDFIs, which are community development investment funds. And these CDFIs then support projects like Woodlawn Central at 100% loan to value and at maybe 5 or 6%, which is you're not going to get anywhere else. Some of the issues behind CDFIs, it could be a little slow. Mm-hmm. Once you get your pre-development, once you get your entitlements, which is your zoning and your permits, then your project, what they call in the industry, is a real project. And there's several ways that you can approach the funding, you know, for the project. You can RFP, you know, certain parts of the project, or you can bring in a general partner who wants to do the whole project. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're looking at.
Yeah.
And we're very close to finalizing, or not, I'm going to say finalizing, but we're very close to finding that right partner.
Yeah.
Because you have to have a shared vision. And it's important to have a shared vision when you're bringing in outside developers, because most of the people at this level don't look like you or me.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue, and be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.